Happy Mother's Day. Gerilyn Steele took the day off as a result. Steve Thompson, normally hear me on Saturday afternoons, then occasionally filling in for Henry Lake. And I will be in Monday night for Henry ahead of the Twins and the Dodgers. Game one of a three-game set at Chavez Ravine. Our pregame show begins at 8. That's the lineup card with Chris Atterbury, Corey Provis, Dan Gladden with all the play-by-play. Same deal Tuesday night, Henry's back, and then a matinee on Wednesday, and we may not have drive time with Darasha on Wednesday, because that'll be a 1:30 pregame show lineup card, and then a 2:10 first pitch. So we could get a little Darasha on Wednesday at the end of the program. We get a long ball game. Maybe not. So we'll play it by ear on Wednesday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the Dodgers, and then they stay in Southern California and play the Angels and Shohei Ohtani. And Ohtani, what an unbelievable talent. If you're not aware, and maybe you don't follow big league baseball, but he's the guy who's a lights out pitcher and one of the top hitters in the game. And there's a lot of comparisons to Babe Ruth, and everybody's heard of Babe Ruth, you know, a pitcher and slugger who eventually was traded from the Red Sox over to the Yankees, where he made his fame. But you could argue that Ohtani may be a better pitcher than the Babe was. I think some of the numbers are pretty extraordinary what this guy's doing.
So I'm going to have a small vent on a Sunday night.
Yeah, that's all good.
Yeah. MLB, Rob Manfred, are you listening? Are you listening? Are you listening? Rob Manfred, New York City. Please bring the Angels to Minnesota earlier in the season, please. That is my request. I actually, late last season, when the Angels were coming in, I've decided to start going to see some of these big sports stars that are coming in to the cities and playing the pro sports teams.
It's a good idea.
I did it earlier this year with Caitlin Clark when the Big Ten Women's Tournament was here, the basketball tournament. And I started it last season with Shohei Ohtani. I'm like, you know what? I see the Angels are coming in. It was in September. It's basically the second to last home series of the season. And I said, you know what? If he's pitching, I'm going to try to go. If it's not Sunday, because I work Sunday,
yep,
and he's in pitching Friday or Saturday, I'm going to go watch. And he pitched that Friday night of the series. And this was, again, probably the 20th of September, around the 15th or 20th of September. And when you get past Labor Day in Minnesota,
yeah,
the weather becomes a scratch-off ticket. You don't know if you're ever going to find a jackpot.
Yeah, well, and I can speak to that because I do football games on Friday night, high school football games. I have a cable TV gig, and then I work for a streaming service as well. And sometimes end of August, early September, you can get some pretty hot Friday night games. But by the end of September, it can get chilly.
Yes.
And you better have the coat, the gloves, and the cap ready to go. And then by October, you know you got to bring the... But yeah, you're absolutely right. September's a roll of the dice, for sure.
So I went to that game, and it was basically everything you described. It was drizzly, if not raining. It was already dark. It was a night game, so it was cold. It was miserable out there. It was probably at best in the upper 40s.
So did he pitch?
He did pitch. I stayed through him. He didn't get through five innings. He got into the fifth inning. And actually didn't give up a hit, but the Twins had labored him, so he had he was, I think, into like the 80s or the 90s in his pitches. So they took him out before the fifth inning was done, and I saw him bat three times. And his third at bat was in the sixth inning, And I said, okay, I'm going to make it through his last at bat, and then I'm out. Because I'm not sitting here for the next three innings when he's not pitching and I might see him bat one more time. No, I'm gone. The funny thing was, that was the night that Albert Pujols hit his 699th and 700th home runs.
Oh, see, so there's that. That's pretty cool.
Yes. Well, so I was leaving the stadium. It was in the sixth inning. I think it got to the middle of the sixth. And I said, I'm bouncing. So I left. As I'm walking out of the stadium, I hear a roar. And I'm thinking, oh, the Twins must have done something. Went to the bottom of the sixth. Someone must have hit one out. Now that I think about it and thinking of the time difference, I think that was when Pujols hit his 699th.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But anyway, I digress. So I checked the schedule this year. I'm like, okay, if Ohtani's coming in, I'll watch him again.
Oh, for sure.
They're coming in late September again.
Yeah.
Rob Manfred, put the Angels here in July, please.
Yeah. Ohtani's numbers, you know, at the plate this year, 39 games, 43 hits, 8 home runs, 26 RBI. In comparison, they have another great player in Mike Trout, 8 homers, 20 RBI for Trout. So he's putting up better numbers than Trout, and then switching over to the pitching and what Ohtani is doing. 4-1, ERA 2.74, 46 innings pitched, 14 runs. Opponents are batting 143 against him. So this guy's a real deal hitter and a legit top flight starting pitcher.
Keep in mind, those numbers are pretty dang good numbers in the dead ball era of the 60s. This isn't like your, this is 274 for an ERA in a live ball era.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's really impressive what this guy does. And the Twins will get Ohtani on this road trip out to Southern California at the end of the week. So there's that. Speaking of the Twins, real quickly, they got a big win over the Cubs, second in a row, 16-3. This is a number I heard from some of the folks I follow on social media. Heather Rule does social media. Is that all the Twins home games sent this out, and the Twins PR staff reported it. They have never scored more games in a 3-game series at Target Field than they did this weekend against the Cubs. And they only had 2 on Friday night, and then they had 11 on Saturday and 16 today. So the 29 runs over 3 games are a club record. By the way, our friends in St. Paul, the Saints, bit of a struggle. 15-3 Indianapolis over St. Paul today. 15-3 the final in that one. Once again, Twins and Dodgers on the radio tomorrow night. When we come back, a poker legend has passed away, and we'll have that story in a moment. Doyle Brunson has died. He was 89 years old. And talk about the accomplishments. You know, poker really has become a big deal. Big-time television programming. And Doyle Brunson maybe as responsible as anyone. We'll have the story in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Steve in for Gerilyn tonight. She took the night off. Jonathan Lowe is our producer here on this Sunday night. News Talk, 830-WCCO. WCCO. Sad news. The godfather of poker, Doyle Brunson, has passed away at the age of 89. Reported by a number of media outlets, the Las Vegas Review Journal are reporting it. Poker News has a story on it as well. He died this weekend at the age of 89. Details weren't available or cause of death. But his agent talked about Brunson. His nickname, and I didn't know this, Texas Dolly.
Yep, Texas, the Texas Dolly.
Yeah. Rose to poker fame in the 70s and was a staple in the high-stakes world right up until his death. He even appeared on some televised poker games over the past year, including the 2022 World Series of Poker main event. He has 10 World Series of Poker bracelets, tied for second behind Phil Hellmuth, and competed in the highest stakes cash games for more than 50 years. He did a book on the game as well, but poker became really a big deal. I would say it was even a fad. I was involved in a regular poker game, a no-limit poker game that we would play in various spots around the Twin Cities. I won't name names. I won't name locations. No, it wasn't that big a deal. Pretty much it was a, I don't even know if I can get in trouble for this. Probably not. It was a friendly game.
Yeah.
You know, the buy-in was only $5,000. No, I'm kidding. it wasn't a friendly game, but it was a big fad. Bars were having poker tournaments and events all over town. People remember that. And he was one of the reasons it became a big deal.
Okay. Now you're getting into my wheelhouse. Hold on. Let me take over the mic a second here. So
don't get in trouble here. Don't admit these high stakes games.
Not high stakes. No, not high stakes necessarily. But I have played poker. I'm taking a little bit of a break from it. But I've played poker up till last couple months, and the big boom when you talk about the poker world. There was a movie or two that came out late 90s that kind of put it on in people's consciousness.
Sure.
The big one that everybody talks about is Rounders.
Yep.
That kind of put it on notice in the late 90s. And then I had just gotten out of college, just moved west to Washington State. And that year was the year that ESPN, 2003... So 20 years ago, ESPN was, I think this was maybe their third or fourth year that they were hosting, that they did a show on the World Series of Poker, and they had the play, the actual play at the final table of the main event of the World Series of Poker, which is the thing. It's the World Series. It's the Stanley Cup. It's the World Cup. It is the thing.
Oh, and there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money on the table. I mean, literally. And I think the visuals from television is what sold it. It's like these guys are playing for big, big bucks.
Yes. And so there was a man that won it that year in 2003. His name is Chris Moneymaker. He was kind of an amateur pro. He was kind of a cross between an amateur and pro. Didn't really play the big money games and wasn't big on the circuit, but he won the main event. That sparked the poker boom and the fact that, oh, anybody can go and win this big tournament. And one of the big voices in helping to spread the effects of the boom was Doyle Brunson.
Yeah.
And he was the main person, the main sage. He's the Yoda of this poker boom. And I was actually out last night watching television at a bar that I was at, and they had on Bally Sports North, and Bally Sports had one of these World Poker Tour events that Brunson was taking part in the last year and a half, I think. And so I'm watching him on the TV last night, and he's just being good old Texas Dolly, just playing, bluffing here and there, playing his hands, winning money, raking in chips. And I'm just like, this dude has so much wisdom. And to hear him pass, it's a blow to the poker world. And you talk about the explosion of it. By the time I moved here in 07, there were companies, not just games that popped up, but there were companies that would entice people out to bars for free poker games.
Absolutely.
And I have T-shirts from those companies still to this day. I wear them to this day. It's amazing how big of a boom it got to be for about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
and it's died off, but there's still a simmering, lingering there for that.
Yeah, I would agree. It was huge for a while. And when I was in that regular game, played with a lot of guys that I knew. Here was the challenge of playing, and I've always felt this, you know, playing poker with my friends over the years, and this goes back a long, long time. There's the challenge in a lot of these games of the people that know how to play and the people that just get lucky, because that's what makes poker unique, is that there's people that know how to play, and then there's people that pull cards on the river that they have no business and win hands, and that gets frustrating. You know what I'm saying?
You don't know how many times I've been frustrated playing a game, and you have to, the best players, and I'm not to that point, I'm not near that point. But the best players can internalize and turn that around. And there is a, there in my opinion, there is a philosophy where you have, you know, you can play more conservatively, you can play more aggressively, and there are nights when those philosophies to playing will serve you well. And there are nights when those philosophies of playing will absolutely run you over.
Yeah.
And it's just, how long can you stick in there?
Yeah, it is a fun game. And, you know, you get busy, work, side gigs, doing games, that sort of thing. It just kind of moved to the back burner. But Doyle Brunson has passed away. I'd love to play again now and then. I don't think there's anything like the rush of having really good cards or having the chance to win a big pot or having a chance in some of these friendly games of getting to a final table. There is a rush to that and having an opportunity that few things do like that in that moment. And I think the competitive nature of it, I do believe this, though, that it is a skill. That there is definitely, to be good at it, that there is skill, there is talent, there is... It's not luck. And for people who like to play slot machines, hey, it's not like playing poker.
I will say this, and again, my opinion, I don't speak for all poker players or some poker players, I speak for myself. The skill in the game comes in the combination of reading the cards, which I would consider reading the situations, reading the cards that have been played, reading the cards that are out on the table, reading the cards that you can beat or that can beat you, and of reading people. That, in my opinion, is the main thing. You read situations, you look at people, how they play. You look at people as far as what they want to play. Do they play anything and everything? Does that basically dictate what you do? Can you dictate what they do? It's reading people and reading situations that make the skill and make those brazen calls or those great folds so interesting to watch and so interesting to try to figure out yourself.
Yeah, it is a fun game, and Doyle Brunson, certainly a legend. I did not know this about him, and credit to Poker News for having this. The Las Vegas paper didn't have this on him, but I had never heard this. Apparently, before becoming a poker pro, he played hoops in the 50s at Hardin-Simmons, where he was a star player. I don't know if you knew that.
I think I did hear that before, yes.
And he banged up his knee But there was the thought that he was so good that he might get a shot way back in the day to play in the NBA. That's really interesting. I didn't know that about. So I think to get to that level, to be an elite college player, a very good college player, you have to have a competitive nature. And in my limited experience playing in poker games, that's a factor. You know, that competitive fire is a big part of it. So Doyle Brunson passes away at the age of 89. We'll have the weather coming up in a moment. One thing I have not had a chance to talk to you about, that Jonathan Lowe, and talk about on the radio, is the Vikings schedule. That was a big deal when the NFL schedule was released. Jonathan Lowe, of course, and his Kansas City Chiefs flying high, basking in the glow, so to speak. Where did Patrick Mahomes show up with the... Oh, he was on stage at the draft in Kansas City with the Lombardi Trophy. That was a good look. That was a good look. Love Patrick Mahomes. But Kansas City, they got a tough opener. The favorites in the NFC North, the Detroit Lions. But we'll get into that, have a little fun with that in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins and Dodgers on the radio tomorrow night. Pregame 8:30 with the lineup card. Chris Atterbury, Corey Provost, Dan Gladden from Chavez Ravine tomorrow night. Twins blew out the Cubs Saturday and again on Sunday. And the ball flying out of the ballpark. How about Joey Gallo's home run? There was a lot of discussion about how far it went. And then the final estimate on that big home run on Saturday, I think they missed the mark on that one. There was some debate on how far that home run flew. The longest home run I've ever seen in person, or should I say the hardest hit ball I've seen on a home run, and this happened to be when Jim Thome was playing for the Chicago White Sox. And we took the girls to Chicago. And when the girls were young, we made the road trip to Chicago a number of times. Take them to the museums, see the sights, go up in what was the Sears Tower and is now Willis Tower. You know, get a view of the city from up there and maybe go on a tour on the Chicago. I've always liked Chicago. And we try to get to a ball game, either the South Side to see the Sox. And it never worked out where the Twins were in town. And we took them up to Wrigley. And it's easy when you're staying in the loop to get on the red line and head to the South Side. And goes right down the freeway, the Dan Ryan, I believe. And then you just exit at, and I think at the time it was U.S. Cellular, the last time we went to the South Side. Many years ago, Thome was still playing for the White Sox. Of course, was with Cleveland, ended up in Chicago on the South Side. And it was a cold day. We had tickets. We bought them in advance. When we got to Chicago, the weather was great. It was sunny. It was comfortable. It was early in the season, but the next day the temperature plummeted. As a matter of fact, when we got off the red line on the South Side, there were flurries, Jonathan Lowe. So it was a cold day at the ballpark. Anyway, I don't even remember who the White Sox were playing that day, but Jim Thome came to the plate. We were sitting, we had really good seats, probably 15 rows up, just outside of first base. So big Jim Thome steps into the box on a cold day, flurries in the air on the South Side of Chicago. He hit a laser beam into the right field seats. Jonathan, this ball didn't get 30 feet off the ground and ended up in the right field seats. It was absolutely hammered. That is the hardest ball I've ever seen. Now, this was before exit velocity and launch angle and all of that. That was absolutely hammered. And imagine hitting a ball that hard on a 33-degree day in Chicago. It was crushed. Now, I didn't see the Gallo home run, but by all accounts, that one on Saturday was absolutely hammered. But that's the hardest ball I've ever seen in person, because off the bat, it was just like in our line of sight, just choop, and denting the seats in right field. Just wow.
That's what I was going to say. Did it leave a hole in the stadium?
I mean, and on a cold day, you're not sticking your hand out to grab that one in the right field bleachers.
Nope, let it hit the seats, let it bounce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let it bounce and then just run and get it.
Oh, just absolutely hammered. So anyway, there was a little controversy about the Joey Gallo home run on Saturday. They got it settled. I still think people are grumbling about that. All right, let's get to the Vikings schedule. Now, Jonathan Lowe, big Kansas City fan, tip of the cap to you and your team. Patrick Mahomes at the draft. By the way, Kansas City put on a great show for the draft. Now, I'm not a fan of the 3 days of hype.
Okay, you and one of my good buddies, y'all need to talk, because I talked with him right as the draft was about to start, and he hates the fact that the draft is now 3 days. It's on Thursday night and Friday night. He hates it. He hates it.
But it appeared to be a big deal. I joked about this, that the Beatles had reunited. There was such a big crowd outside, Union Depot?
Union Station.
Union Station. It looked like there were like 500,000 people. It was ridiculous.
I was so tempted to go. I was so tempted. And one of my cousins did go that first night. He was there. He texted us a few pictures. But he was down there in that sea of humanity on that first night.
Now, I know, folks, you don't need to text or email. I know John and George are no longer with us. But, I mean, it was that type of event where it's like, and that many people showed up to watch the draft? It was impressive.
Yeah.
And the way they did it outside of Union Station, Union Depot was in St. Paul. Union Station outside of Kansas City. They spared no expense on that set. It was really impressive. My favorite part of the draft, because he is my favorite player in the NFL and it's not close, is your quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. And when he came out with that was a cool moment. I mean, that he is, without question, you could say there are other quarterbacks or other players. He's the face of the NFL.
He is.
He is fun to watch. He plays with great joy. He's got two now. He is terrific. For me, right now, I don't think there's an athlete in sport that will compel me. Now, granted, Kansas City has a lot of primetime games, rightfully so. They appear on television in this neck of the woods a lot. They're typically, and I mean, they get a lot of Sunday nights, they get Monday nights, they get primetime games, they get those late window games at 3:30, 3:25, whatever. So we see Kansas City a lot, but I enjoy watching him as much as any player in any sport at the moment. I don't know. I mean, obviously for you, because you grew up and are a big fan of the club, but I don't know who I put ahead of him right now in sport. I don't know if there is one.
I struggle to find somebody. I could probably put Stephen Curry on that level.
Yeah, Curry.
I could, you know, maybe not all the time, but maybe at certain times, a Lionel Messi with his creativity on the pitch.
And I'm not as much of a soccer guy. I mean,
right.
But yeah, I think Tiger at the peak of his powers, or way back in the day, you know, for folks who remember, you know, Jack in his prime, you know, mid-70s to that final Masters win. You know, Jack was in contention and on the leaderboard. I'm going to watch this.
Yep.
You could say that about Gretzky. Michael Jordan is one that, you know, certainly is, you know, right up there at the very top of the list.
I'll give you one. Ali, definitely. Muhammad Ali, most certainly.
Yeah.
I'll give you one that most people wouldn't think of, and it's you know, it's something that's over in a flash, and you don't think about it that much. Usain Bolt.
Yeah. I'll say this, and I'm glad you brought up Usain Bolt. Of all the Olympic memories I've had from the time I started watching the Olympics as a little kid, I really, the first memory of the Olympics for me, this is going in the way back machine, Mark Spitz in 72 and the tragedy in Munich. Twins and Dodgers on the radio tomorrow night, pregame 8:30 with the lineup card, Chris Atterbury, Corey Provost, Dan Gladden from Chavez Ravine tomorrow night. Twins blew out the Cubs Saturday and again on Sunday. And the ball flying out of the ballpark. How about Joey Gallo's home run? There was a lot of discussion about how far it went. And then the final estimate on that big home run on Saturday, I think they missed the mark on that one. There was some debate on how far that home run flew. The longest home run I've ever seen in person, or should I say the hardest hit ball I've seen on a home run, and this happened to be when Jim Thome was playing for the Chicago White Sox, and we took the girls to Chicago, and when the girls were young, we made the road trip to Chicago a number of times. Take them to the museums, see the sights, go up in what was the Sears Tower and is now Willis Tower, you know, get a view of the city from up there, and maybe go on a tour on the Chicago. I've always liked Chicago, and we try to get to a ball game, either the South Side to see the Sox, and it never worked out where the Twins were in town, and we took them up to Wrigley. And it's easy when you're staying in the loop to get on the red line and head to the South Side, and goes right down the freeway, the Dan Ryan, I believe, and then you just exit at, and I think at the time it was U.S. Cellular, the last time we went to the South Side. Many years ago, Thome was still playing for the White Sox, of course, was with Cleveland, ended up in Chicago on the South Side, and it was a cold day. We had tickets. We bought them in advance. When we got to Chicago, the weather was great. It was sunny. It was comfortable. It was early in the season, but the next day, the temperature plummeted. As a matter of fact, when we got off the red line on the South Side, there were flurries, Jonathan Lowe. So it was a cold day at the ballpark. Anyway, I don't even remember who the White Sox were playing that day, but Jim Thome came to the plate. We were sitting, we had really good seats, probably 15 rows up just outside of first base. So big Jim Thome steps into the box on a cold day, flurries in the air on the South Side of Chicago. He hit a laser beam into the right field seats. Jonathan, this ball didn't get 30 feet off the ground and ended up in the right field seats. It was absolutely hammered. That is the hardest ball I've ever seen. Now, this was before exit velocity and launch angle and all of that. That was absolutely hammered. And imagine hitting a ball that hard on a 33-degree day in Chicago. It was crushed. Now, I didn't see the Gallo home run, but by all accounts, that one on Saturday was absolutely hammered. But that's the hardest ball I've ever seen in person, because off the bat, it was just like in our line of sight, just choop, and denting the seats in right field. Just wow.
That's what I was going to say. Did it leave a hole in the stadium?
I mean, and on a cold day, you're not sticking your hand out to grab that one in the right field bleachers.
Nope. Let it hit the seats. Let it bounce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let it bounce and then just run and get it.
Oh, just absolutely hammered. So anyway, there was a little controversy about the Joey Gallo home run on Saturday. They got it settled. I still think people are grumbling about that. All right, let's get to the Vikings schedule. Now, Jonathan Lowe, big Kansas City fan, tip of the cap to you and your team. Patrick Mahomes at the draft. By the way, Kansas City put on a great show for the draft. Now, I'm not a fan of the 3 days of hype.
Oh,
I mean,
you,
in reality,
okay. You and one of my good buddies, y'all need to talk because I talked with him right as the draft was about to start, and he hates the fact that the draft is now 3 days. It's on Thursday night and Friday night. He hates it. He hates it.
But it appeared to be a big deal. I thought I joked about this, that the Beatles had reunited. There was such a big crowd outside, Union Depot?
Union Station.
Union Station. It looked like there were like 500,000 people. It was ridiculous. Now
I was so tempted to go. I was so tempted. And one of my cousins did go that first night. He was there. He texted me, texted us a few pictures. But he was down there in that sea of humanity on that first night.
Now, I know, folks, you don't need to text or email. I know John and George are no longer with us. But, I mean, it was that type of event where it's like, and that many people showed up to watch the draft? It was impressive.
Yeah.
And the way they did it outside of Union Station, Union Depot is in St. Paul. Union Station outside of Kansas City. They spared no expense on that set. It was really impressive. My favorite part of the draft, because he is my favorite player in the NFL and it's not close, is your quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. And when he came out with the – I mean, that was a cool moment. I mean, that – he is, without question – you could say there are other quarterbacks or other players. He's the face of the NFL.
He is.
He is fun to watch. He plays with great joy. He's got two now. He is terrific. For me, right now, I don't think there's an athlete in sport that will compel me. Now, granted, Kansas City has a lot of primetime games, rightfully so. They appear on television in this neck of the woods a lot. They're typically, and I mean, they get a lot of Sunday nights, they get Monday nights, they get primetime games, they get those late window games at 3:30, 3:25, whatever. So we see Kansas City a lot. But I enjoy watching him as much as any player in any sport at the moment. I don't know. I mean, obviously for you, because you grew up and are a big fan of the club, but I don't know who I put ahead of him right now in sport. I don't know if there is one.
I struggle to find somebody. I could probably put Stephen Curry on that level.
Yeah, Curry.
I could, you know, maybe not all the time, but maybe at certain times, a Lionel Messi with his creativity on the pitch.
Yeah, and I'm not as much of a soccer guy. I mean,
right.
But yeah, I think Tiger at the peak of his powers, or way back in the day, you know, for folks that remember, you know, Jack in his prime, you know, mid-70s to that final Masters win. You know, Jack was in contention and on the leaderboard. I'm going to watch this.
Yep.
You could say that about Gretzky. Michael Jordan is one that, you know, certainly is, you know, right up there at the very top of the list.
I'll give you one. Ali, definitely. Muhammad Ali, most certainly.
Yeah.
I'll give you one that most people wouldn't think of, and it's you know, it's something that's over in a flash, and you don't think about it that much. Usain Bolt.
Yeah. I'll say this, and I'm glad you brought up Usain Bolt. of all the Olympic memories I've had from the time I started watching the Olympics as a little kid, I really, the first memory of the Olympics for me, this is going in the way back machine, Mark Spitz in 72 and the tragedy in Munich.
Yep.
And the Israeli delegation, horrible. But my first Olympic memory goes back to Spitz and the 7 gold medals in Munich in 72. But I'm glad you brought up Bolt. That, and I can't remember what games it was, but it was the 200 meters. Because 100 is, they're out of the block and it's over.
Yeah.
But the 200 is my favorite race because they start on the other side. And they make that turn from home, and I'm like, this guy is flying. I've never seen it. I still get chills thinking about, and you know the race, and I can't remember which games, where Bolt comes around that turn for home in the 200, and I'm like, wow, look at this guy.
Yeah, and I believe this is the same race that you're thinking of, where he's coming around the corner and he's coming down the downstretch, and right before the line, he turns and you see in the photo where they take the finish of the race, you see him looking at the camera with a big smile on his face as he's crossing the line, about a body length ahead of the next person. It's just it's absurdly great. It's absurdly awesome.
Yeah, I'll just never forget that. Another one that stands out for me, and this goes way back, and you can watch it, is the Great Secretariat. Not a human, equine athlete, as the late Dark Star would say, in this very spot, in this very studio, in the Belmont Stakes. And there wasn't much of a field, but when Secretariat makes the turn for home and is headed down the stretch they come, and Secretariat, and these are credible horses behind Secretariat to close out, do yourself a favor and look that up on social media and watch that video of Secretariat coming down the stretch and winning the race by a quarter of a mile, eighth, I mean, whatever it was, an unbelievable athletic performance.
I had my YouTube page up, my YouTube feed up, and people have been talking about Secretary, because this is the 50th anniversary of him winning the Triple Crown this year.
Yeah.
This is 50th anniversary. I had, and a video came up, Belmont 73, Secretariat wins. I had never watched the entire race. I had never watched the full belt. I didn't have watched, I guess, all three of those races from 73. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to click this. And so I got to the race, and I watched the race in total just a couple days ago.
Yeah, it is really cool.
And it was not a blowaway. It was not a blowout at the beginning. He was in stride with his rival, Sham, as they came back around the back, and then he just lengthens and pulls away and away and away. And it's just it's just that all jaw-dropping moment of he's just so much better.
Yeah, those are the cool things in sport that I love. It was like Gretzky in any given game, and I had a chance to see him at the Met. When Gretzky was on the ice, or when Jordan appeared at Target Center. These are great hockey players. You don't get to the NHL or the NBA if you're not a good player. But Jordan or Gretzky were that much better. It was noticeable that they were that much better. That's what I love about sports. All right, we'll finally get a sneak peek at that schedule. Once again, Kansas City opens with a toughie against Detroit. Yes, we're saying that. We'll have some highlights from the early Viking schedule in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We are a bit tight on time as we wind things down. All the news at 10. Big thanks to Jonathan Lowe. Want to get that out of the way. Gerilyn has the night off. She'll be back next Sunday here on News Talk, 830 WCCO, and happy Mother's Day. A lot of hype about the NFL schedule. It is amazing how they can make news 52 weeks a year. They're always out there. Vikes open on the 10th, Tampa Bay. Week 2 at Philly. Week 3, home to the LA Chargers. Week 4 at Carolina, Adam Thielen with Carolina now. And then week 5, Kansas City, Jonathan Lowe will be in the house. That's a tough start. That is a tough start for the Purple. You got Philly, you got Kansas City, you got the LA Chargers in the mix. I threw out 1-4 being a possibility. I better run. We are a bit tight on time as we wind things down. All the news at 10. Big thanks to Jonathan Lowe. Want to get that out of the way. Gerilyn has the night off. She'll be back next Sunday here on News Talk, 830 WCCO, and happy Mother's Day. A lot of hype about the NFL schedule. It is amazing how they can make news 52 weeks a year. They're always out there. Vikes open on the 10th, Tampa Bay. Week 2 at Philly. Week 3, home to the LA Chargers. Week 4 at Carolina, Adam Thielen with Carolina now. And then week 5, Kansas City, Jonathan Lowe will be in the house. That's a tough start. That is a tough start for the Purple. You got Philly, you got Kansas City, you got the LA Chargers in the mix. I threw out 1-4 being a possibility. I better run.